Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. I'm Tim Shanahan, your host, and today we're going to get into print-to-speech or speech-to-print. That is the question. This is a blast from the past. This blog entry first was posted on June 4th, 2022, and reposted on August 17th, 2024, so a little over 2 years ago. Recently, I received a couple of similar inquiries to the one that stimulated this blog entry in the first place, so I thought it might be worth reposting. A quick review of recent research revealed some studies focused on the importance of cognitive flexibility in phonics development, which suggests to me that adding spelling to the phonics regime may contribute to a stronger understanding of the conditional nature of decoding patterns. Since speech-to-print and print-to-speech are not just reverse processes, grappling with both may contribute to the necessary cognitive flexibility kids need to effectively implement their phonics knowledge. Also, I found another recent study showing that adding spelling activity to phonics instruction improves decoding, this one focusing on kindergarten children. The evidence continues to increase in support of adding speech-to-print to the mix, not necessarily replacing print-to-speech, but supplementing it. Now, here was the original question that I received. I know you typically don't talk about specific programs, but I really would like to know your thoughts. I'd always wanted more training in a structured literacy program. I always thought Wilson and specifically Orton-Gillingham approaches, OG, were the gold standard. More recently, I began reading about programs labeled as speech-to-print. That just means that the kids start with the sounds and move to the letters rather than starting with the letters and moving to the sounds. Proponents of speech-to-print methods claim it is much faster to teach kids to read and spell than OG-based approaches. Is there research to support this? Are these studies comparing programs based on OG that mainly follow a more print-to-speech approach and programs that are more specifically speech-to-print? Well, my response is this. You're right that I don't comment on specific programs. However, I do talk about research on programs or the consistency of certain parts of a program with research. Let's start with the claim that Orton-Gillingham and other programs derived from it are somehow the gold standard. To me, a gold standard program would consistently result in positive learning outcomes and would outperform competing methods. Outperformance would be demonstrated by direct research comparisons or by meta-analyses summarizing disparate but relevant studies. Gold standard approaches would result, on average, in more learning. If OG is the gold standard, it should reliably do better than other explicit decoding programs. The National Reading Panel analyzed the effectiveness of phonics across 38 studies that evaluated 18 different curricula or approaches to teaching phonics. Our conclusion was that phonics added a valuable ingredient to literacy teaching, and that programs with explicit systematic phonics outdistanced those that did not. What about different types of phonics teaching? Well, we made some of those comparisons too. Synthetic phonics, reading words from individual letters and sounds, for instance, had higher average effects than analytic phonics, focused on syllables, morphemes, and the use of known words as analogies. This difference wasn't statistically significant, however, which really means that these different approaches did equally well. Synthetic phonics was no better than analytic phonics or vice versa. We didn't compare individual phonics programs with each other. There were usually only one or two studies of each program, not enough evidence for meaningful comparisons of phonics programs. An exception to that would be Orton-Gillingham. There were enough studies on that to compute a meaningful estimate of its effectiveness, and it could have been compared, say, with the other body of phonics research. I honestly didn't push for such an analysis then because I feared the results would be misleading. OG often failed to teach kids much about reading, but usually this was with severely disabled, hospitalized populations. It was clear that OG exerted no miracle impact on those learners, but would any other program have done so? It's impossible to say. Over the past 20 years, more research has accumulated, and OG now has merited its very own meta-analysis. And that study found that OG was effective, but with rather modest benefits, lower effectiveness than one would expect from average phonics studies like the ones that the National Reading Panel considered. So much for being the gold standard. Orton-Gillingham procedures are no more effective than any other explicit systematic phonics instruction, despite the religious fervor of some of its advocates. Of course, those true believers will argue against these data. Well, they didn't look at the right version of OG, or I do it a little differently than others, and it really works well for my kids, or the new trainers aren't as good as the past ones, so they probably studied teachers who weren't well trained. Those kinds of complaints aside, there's no reason to think that those kinds of things affect OG any more or any less than any other program. If it's that hard to find a potent version, then we shouldn't expect widespread success from it. We lack direct comparisons of OG with other phonics approaches, but it looks like it works about as well as any, though sometimes it doesn't do as well as those. Which moves us on to the second point, the one about speech-to-print approaches to phonics. Now, I've often grumbled about the lack of evaluation of individual features of complex instructional programs. Research may affirm the benefits of a program without showing its active ingredients. You'd think with all the interest in phonics, there would be many such studies exploring the implications of sound tracing, analytic synthetic approaches, grapheme-phoneme sequences, inclusion of morphological analysis, decodable text, emphasis on consistency versus flexibility, print-to-speech and speech-to-print approaches, dosage variation, and so on. Unfortunately, there are few research comparisons of print-to-speech and speech-to-print. There's relevant information about that difference, just nothing that I would call definitive. Historically, phonics programs tended to emphasize print-to-speech. Kids are taught to identify letters, to link sounds to those letters, and then to sound out words by sounding each letter. That sequence mirrors the process readers must use during reading. Look at the letters, use that information to generate a phonological representation. It seems reasonable to teach students explicitly what we eventually want them to do. However, advantageous curriculum designs do not need to mirror their endpoints so closely. Engaging in a process like reading and learning to read are not really the same thing. So my point is, the curriculum doesn't actually have to look like what the outcome is. Perhaps the opposite, starting with phonemes and pronunciations and connecting those to letters and printed words might be a good idea. It's possible that trying to spell and write words does more to enhance phonemic awareness, and it may somehow make the phonology more prominent or easy to perceive. The earliest evidence I know of on this was reported by Jean Shaw back in her book, The Great Debate. In her qualitative review of research on phonics, she concluded that programs with spelling, writing, and or dictation did better than those without. I followed up on that in my reading-writing relationship research in the 1980s. I found spelling and decoding to be closely related, even when a lot of other variables were available to suck up the variance. Later, Ginger Berninger and her colleagues followed up on that, improved it, and with an even more ambitious effort, they found pretty much the same thing. Marilyn Adams and Linnea Airy both theorized on that possibility as well, and Steve Graham reported a meta-analysis on spelling instruction that found spelling to improve reading, probably because of its contribution to decoding. That's all fascinating, but it's indirect. It suggests value, it doesn't prove it. Not everyone agrees with my assessment of those data. Louisa Motes, for example, has several publications that treat this as a settled matter, claiming speech-to-print to be the most effective. Her reasoning hasn't convinced me, and yet the preponderance of current data are on her side. I suspect that adding speech-to-print works, including adding spelling to traditional phonics instruction, but it's too early to claim it to be a proven fact. Perhaps the closest thing we have to a direct test of the proposition is a meta-analysis of 11 studies. It concluded that instruction that integrated encoding into decoding instruction led to significantly higher reading achievement. Still not the strongest evidence because it combined investigations that compared encoding with decoding, which is a good thing, along with those that compared encoding instruction with things like extra math lessons. At some point, any decoding program must focus on print-to-speech, since that's what we do in reading. However, I think there are real benefits to be derived from activities like invented spelling, spelling instruction, word construction from sounds, and so on, in any phonics program. Speech-to-print activities appear to increase learning. My advice, get a phonics program that includes such activities or layer them into a traditional print-to-speech program, including Orton-Gillingham. And that's my final word on that. This podcast is being published as a blog entry on the Shanahan on Literacy website, and it will appear on August 17th, 2024. For those of you who would like a written version of these comments, you can go there to get it. I haven't counted up the number, but there must be a good 15 research references in this one, so you might want to come to it for that. This, if you remember, it was a blast from the past. This was published before, and I've just updated it. In fact, there's a link on the site to the original appearance of it, where you can see the 37 comments that teachers and other scholars made about what I had to say here. And so you might want to go and look those up. In any event, I would certainly like to thank our sound engineer, Greg Johnson, and I would like to thank you for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you up the road a piece.